Thank you. Okay, so up to the two dots on the Gemara. Right after the Gemara starts, after the Mishnah on Chesam and Beis. So we said that a son is sent into exile if he kills his father accidentally.
Yeah.
So we start off with a kasha. The Gemara says Rimini. We have a contradictory source, which seems to imply the opposite. There's a pasuk that says, in the topic of killing by accident, it says, Make nefesh bishgaga, the person who kills who hits a soul inadvertently, he is sent into exile.
Jewish soul,
yeah. Right, so this word soul here is the extra word here that the Gemara is going to try to darshan here, right? This word kills a Jewish soul inadvertently. So it says, Prat lamaka aviv. This comes to exclude somebody that hits his father. Why? Because it says that somebody who hits the soul of his father, right, that's what this halach is. So it seems to imply that it's only going to be in a case where you would only be punished if you killed the person, if you hit his soul, right? You eliminated his soul. But if you just hit the person and caused them a little bit of damage, there can't be any punishment.
How do you kill his soul? Yeah,
by killing somebody. That's actually killing somebody, as opposed to just hitting somebody. That's what we're saying. You don't get rid of the soul when you just hit the guy, right? So what we're saying here is that the only time a person is sent into exile is if there would only be a punishment if you hit his soul, as opposed to just hitting him. Whereas we know that's not true by a son and his father, because if a son hits his father and causes a wound, even just a wound, he gets killed. Right, so we're saying that we're excluding a son who kills his father from exile because it doesn't fit the parameters of the verse. The verse says the only person who gets sent to exile is somebody that would only be punished for killing, not punished as well for hitting. And since we know a son is punished just for hitting his father, so it can't be talking about a son, and a son must be excluded from the whole topic of exile. Yeah.
How can we kill our soul? We know very well that the soul...
You're right.
Why would they say that if it's not true?
Well, I think there's different words for soul also, right? There's different words. There's you have nefesh, neshama, right?
Yes.
Ruach, maybe even... It's true, but they may refer to different layers. The neshama is really what we're talking about, which is really the essence of the soul that continues on forever. Could be the nefesh is more like the life force or something like that. Like even animals, we say, have a nefesh, right? So it could be that it's more like the life force.
Separated,
Right. So it's a good question, but the Torah uses this in its expression often when it's referring to a life. It calls it a nefesh, right? When you take away the nefesh, you take away the life. So again, since the son who hits his father is not only punished for taking the life, he's also punished merely for hitting. So we use this source to exclude a son who kills his father from exile, even though he would be killed if he killed his father on purpose, or even if he just merely hit his father on purpose, he would be killed. Okay. Good. So, well, not good, because we have a contradiction. Mm-hmm. Our Mishnah said that the son is exiled when he kills his father accidentally. And we have this brisa here that says that he's not, because the pasuk says, Make nefesh bishkaga. Make nefesh, right? He has to hit the guy who hits the soul. Right? That's the guy who's exiled. Rav Kahana. So we have two ways. We're going to have two ways of resolving this contradiction, right? Whether a son is exiled or he's not exiled. So this is the first approach. Rav Kahana Lokasha. Rav Kahana says it's not a problem, this contradiction. HaRab Shimon v'HaRabanan. This is really a machlokes. Rabbi Shimon is of the opinion that holds that a son is never exiled for killing his father. And the Rabbanan, the rabbis, are of the opinion that a son is, yes, exiled for killing his father. And now we're going to explain what the debate is really all about. By way of background to this debate, there is a machlokes in Sanhedrin between Rabbi Shimon and Rabbi Yehuda, which is really the same here, Rabbi Shimon and the rabbis, about which of the four death penalties is the most severe.
Winter.
Right? You guys went through this, right? Yeah. So it's not only a machlokes of which one is the most severe, it's also a machlokes of which one is the least severe. Meaning everybody agrees which two are the two that are more severe, and which two are the two that are less severe. The question is the order of the top two and the order of the bottom two, right? So you guys remember what are the four death penalties?
Burning stone.
Yeah. Burning stone, strangulation.
Sword.
Right? Sword was number four, right? Burning, stoning, strangulation, and beheading. Now, they're all a little bit different than they sound, right? For those of you who saw in Sanhedrin, you get more of the details of exactly how they go.
Strangulation's nice.
Well, I don't know if I would take that one. But the lower two, the category of the bottom two, are strangulation and beheading, right? Those are the bottom two.
Yeah.
So there's a debate between Rabbi Shimon and the rabbis which one of those is the lowest of all four and which one is the second lowest of all four, right? The rabbis hold that beheading is number three and strangulation is the lowest of all of them. The rabbis hold strangulation is the lowest of all of them. That's the bottom of the chain. So like you said, right? Not so bad, right? Right? But yeah.
It's a scar.
But the rabbis swap it, and they say that strangulation... I just did the rabbis. Rabbi Shimon swaps it, and he says, no, strangulation is more severe.
You suffer more.
And the beheading is the least severe. Okay.
Now. It's more instant.
Huh?
Because it's more instant.
Because I guess that's the reason. I mean, you can. Yeah, it's hard to figure out exactly all the reasons for these things, right? But seemingly, that's the point, right? Yeah. That it's a much quicker way to go. Second point of introduction here is a son who kills his father on purpose. Right? He kills his father on purpose. He's violated two mitzvos or two averos. Number one, he's killed, right? That's a murder in general. It's a murder in general, which is prohibited.
Yeah, honoring his father.
Right? And the second one, well, I don't know about honoring, but the second one is we know that there's also a different violation, which is hitting, right? Causing a wound, right? If he wouldn't have killed him, he would have just caused the wound. It would be bad. Now, probably there's a wound if the father is dead now, right? So probably there's also a wound here, too. So he's really subject, in theory, to two death penalties. And they're different death penalties. Mm-hmm. They're not the same. For killing, standard murder, which death penalty is the usual...
We give the worst one, and the other one gets killed.
Well, hold on 1 second. Just standard case here, before there. When there was just a murder. For normal murder, what is the appropriate death penalty?
Sword.
We had every answer in the book. Sword is the correct answer, right? Murder is sword, right? Right? Murder is sword. What about wounding the father? What death penalty is that?
Exile.
Huh?
Exile?
No.
It's a death penalty.
Well, it's also
stoning. Right, for murdering on purpose the father.
Stoning.
Not stoning.
Sword.
Also not sword.
Oh, strangulation.
Strangulation. There we go. Number three. Third door, right? Door number three, right? Right? Strangulation is the winner. Right? Okay, so again, let's just summarize, right? So for murder, which he did over here to his father in the case I'm suggesting, he would get beheaded. For wounding his father, he would get the penalty of strangulation. Now, luckily for him, it's your lucky day. We can't kill you twice, right? So you're only going to get one of the two. So which one should we give him?
The more severe one.
The more severe one, right? That's generally the principle here, is you give the more severe one. You're included. You don't get the other one, right? You don't need to do that to the dead guy, right? You don't need to re-strangle the dead guy or whatever, right? So... what we've just pointed out is it's a debate which one is more severe. Mm-hmm. So we're going to see that Rabbi Shimon's going to hold that a person who kills his father is going to get the more severe. Do you remember which one he held was more severe? Strangling. Strangulation. So he's going to hold somebody who kills their father gets strangled, whereas the rabbis hold that somebody that kills their father is going to get beheaded. That's the whole introduction here, right? We need this introduction to understand the next couple lines. So, the Rabbi Shimon, according to Rabbi Shimon, the Omar Chenek Chamor Misayef. According to Rabbi Shimon, who holds that strangulation is more severe of a punishment than beheading, than sword, right? Strangulation is worse than sword. Shigigas Sayef. So, right. So now, what should this guy get? The guy who kills his son should get strangled. But that would be true, and that is true according to Rabbi Shimon if he does it on purpose. However, now let's knock it down to an accidental case. So, why does Rabbi Shimon say a son does not get exiled? Because Rabbi Shimon says, Shigiga Sayif Nitna Lakapara, only the lowest level of death penalty, which implies a less severe crime, right? That one gets exiled. Right? If we have four death penalties, and normally murder is included in the lowest one, so only if you do something where you would get that lowest death penalty on purpose. So now if I did the same thing by accident, that's where I would get exiled, because that is an appropriate kapara for that low-level crime. Right. However, if I did something that was a higher-level crime, that was a strangulation, says Rabbi Shimon, so we don't allow you to get the atonement through the exile, because what you did was too severe. Right. So again, so it says, Shigiga Sayef Nitna Lakapara, a accidental crime which would bear the death penalty of beheading, if it was done on purpose, nitna lakapara, is given for atonement if it was done by accident. So that's the case, we let you go to exile. When if what you would have done on purpose would have got saif, sword, so then by accident you get exile. Shigigas chenek, lo nitna lakapara, but an accidental version of something that on purpose would have got strangulation does not lead to exile because it is not something that we give you an atonement for. It was too severe. It was too severe what you did for there to be an atonement. And that's why Rabbi Shimon is of the opinion a son does not get exiled. Why does a son not get exiled? Because the punishment he should be getting if he was doing it on purpose is strangulation. So now that he did it by accident, no exile for you, because exile is only appropriate for the lowest level of all the different crimes, which is beheading, not the higher level of strangulation, the higher level of crime of strangulation. Now, you can really ask if this is really true. How could it possibly, I don't have an answer to this question, but you could ask the question, how could it possibly be that the act of wounding a father is a more severe crime than murdering the father, right? How could that possibly be, right?
But it's not on purpose, right?
Even not, you know, when they're both on purpose, everything else is the same in a vacuum. We're saying that the act of hitting a father is more severe, is bearing a more severe punishment than the act of killing right. Which is hard to understand. Yeah. Right?
So is there a machloket that it's chenek for
killing a father? Yeah, I mean, again, it's all dependent on which one is more severe, because there's two punishments that should be coming your way.
The Torah doesn't say which punishment.
No, it just tells you that they're general, that these two punishments would apply. So now we have to figure out, using the normal rules, how to figure out which of the two to give, and we give the more severe. So according to Rabbi Shimon, that strangulation is more severe, we give him strangulation. And strangulation is not something that, if done accidentally, would ever lead to exile. And that's Rabbi Shimon's opinion of why a son never gets exiled, because on purpose he would have got strangled, and anything that's on purpose strangled does not equal exile by accident. Right? It doesn't follow. Right? Okay, so that's Rabbi Shimon's opinion. Let's just get the rabbis,
and then
we'll compare.
Exile means he gets killed?
No, he gets nothing.
Nothing.
It's nothing. Whenever you do, you don't get exiled, you get nothing, because the only time you get killed is if it was intentional with witnesses and whatever. But it's in this middle ground where you don't deserve the atonement of exile, but you didn't do something bad enough to actually get killed. So you're in the middle ground where you get nothing, and probably Hashem's got something waiting for you. That's probably what's coming, right? Do tshuva promptly if that's the case.
So in this case, there's no warning involved. There is no...
I think there is a warning involved. No, there's no warning involved. There's no warning. For accidental, there can't have been warning. You're right. It has to be just witnesses.
You can't be warned when you do something accidental.
Right.
So that contradicts the other thing. But unless you warn, you cannot be...
Well, a kill. That's what we were saying. We're talking about for administering punishments. And what we said before was the warning was there, the primary purpose, or at least there was a machlokas. But one of the opinions said that the primary purpose of the warning is to differentiate between someone's intent to see if they were doing it on purpose or inadvertently. So the whole point over here is if we're saying that the guy did it inadvertently, then... Or if there's a side to say that he did it inadvertently, it must be there was no warning to have verified that his intention was on purpose. Okay, so that's Rabbi Shimon's opinion as to why there is no exile for a son who kills his father. L'rabbanin, but according to the rabbis, the Amri Saif Chamor Michenech, they hold that beheading is more severe than strangulation. So they flip the order of the death penalties. So therefore... No, I'm okay. Therefore, what... It's okay. Therefore, what is the death penalty for the son who kills his father on purpose? Beheading, because you get the more severe of the two. In this case, the rabbis hold the more severe is the beheading. And they say, well, now we're just in a normal classical case of beheading, which is the punishment that all exilees get, right? So the rabbis say, no problem to exile the son, right? Because again, right, they're saying that the intentional version of this crime would result in beheading. And so too, every murder results in beheading. And therefore, there's no reason here to differentiate this case and say that there shouldn't be any exile. And Rabbi Shimon says the only reason to differentiate is because only beheadings ever get sent to exile when they're done accidentally, not strangulations. But the rabbis say, I don't know, I don't even have to get into that point with you. We don't have to debate this point. But this case is not a case of strangulation, it's a case of beheading. So it's normal like all the other cases. And therefore, if he does it accidentally, he will get sent to exile. What's this? That's better on this side? Okay. So the rabbis that they say beheading is more severe than strangulation. Horeg aviv b'shogeg, somebody who kills his father accidentally, shigiga saifu, is a punishment of beheading, and therefore it's perfect because beheadings lead to exiles. Right? If you did it on purpose, it would be beheaded. Inadvertent exile, perfect, no problem. The rabbis are consistent in their opinion. The shigiga saif nitla kapara, and as we know, all the accidental versions of beheading would result in the atonement of exile. So the conclusion here of opinion number one is that this source that told us, that contradicted our Mishnah, and told us that children do not get exiled when they kill their fathers, that is only according to Rabbi Shimon, who holds that the punishment is strangulation, and that's why they don't get exiled. But our Mishnah that holds that children do get exiled, that's the opinion of the rabbis, right, who hold that the punishment is sword, and therefore they do get exiled. That's answer number one of how to resolve this contradiction between our Mishnah and the Braisa.
Is this something common that they have to go through all this to decide the punishment? Killing fathers and that? Or?
Well, we know from the previous page, or two pages ago, none of these death penalties was all that common.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah,
but, right. We see that it's not that common. However, at the same time, we need to know the rules if something comes up. Right, if once in 100 years, once in 500 years, if a case came up, we'd have to know how to appropriately adjudicate it.
And how severe the avera is.
Also, for a person to know how severe the avera is, very good point. A lot of the meaning, what we mentioned there, or what you guys probably mentioned over there, is part of the reason why the Torah mentions all these death penalties, if we're barely ever going to impose them, is so that a person should understand how severe the different transgressions are, and which ones to make sure that they stay away from, and if, God forbid, they do, which ones need larger tshuva.
The heading just seems so,
final.
Final? No walking this one back? Yeah, here, they're all pretty final. They're all pretty bad. They're all pretty graphic, to be honest, right? The question is how is it helping the person to achieve a kapara, that atonement for what they did? Right? So there's something linked in their act to the actual specific details of the death penalty, which is supposed to give the person a kapara. Okay, more on that in Sanhedrin. If you go back to Sanhedrin for more details on the 7th chapter, 8th chapter of Sanhedrin.
There's
more
no
details.
Documented case of anything like this ever happening.
Somebody killing their father?
No, yeah, and get this punishment. I mean, it's not recorded anywhere. I've never heard of it.
I can't think of an example off the top of my head, but...
We also don't have records of every case that came to Beit.
No. I'm just thinking from Tanakh or whatever. It's pretty wild things that go on in Tanakh. Almost every single weird case happens at some point in Tanakh, right? Right. So I try to think if there's some example, but I can't off the top of my head.
David's son,
Sean. He killed him. He tried. He didn't kill him.
Right.
He tried to kill. He didn't kill him. Right.
He didn't kill himself.
No, I don't think he got his hands on him to wound him. I don't. Right. I don't think he came close. Right. So I can't think of any good examples. I'm sure you could. Keep working on it. Okay.
Noah's
son. He also didn't kill him. Second
example.
Did he? Maybe he wounded his pride. Maybe he wounded his pride.
Some say cut hand that he.
Right, I hear. That should be a wounding.
I should leave a link.
Interesting. Okay. Says the Gemara, second answer to resolve the contradiction of is a son exiled or is he not exiled? Rava Amar. Rava says a different answer. Rava's going to say, nah, the whole thing's the rabbis. You don't have to make rabbis Reb Shimon. Both sources are the rabbis. Sometimes he does get exiled, sometimes he doesn't get exiled. He always gets exiled if he kills his father by accident. But the case where we said he does not get exiled, we have to reread the words. What did it say? It said, excluding the case, lemake aviv, of somebody who hits his father. Well, why would somebody who just hit their father get exiled? He didn't kill his father. So Rava says, nah, you might think that someone who just hits their father should get exiled too. Because if he would have done it on purpose, he would have got killed for hitting his father. So since he would have got killed if he did it on purpose, maybe he should get exiled if he does it by accident. Whoa. Maybe he should get exiled if he does it by accident. Says Rava, no, he doesn't get exiled just for hitting. And that's the two sources of the rabbis. The first source of the rabbi says if he kills his father by accident, he always gets exiled. If he just hits his father by accident, you might have thought that he would get exiled, since hitting on purpose would result in death. Maybe accidental killing should result in exile. Says the rabbis, no. And that's the novelty of the verse where it says make nefesh. Only someone that kills his father is going to go to exile, not somebody that just wounds his father's who's not going to go to exile. Let's see that inside. Rava, my Rava says, Prat lo'osei chabura be'aviv b'shogeg. Well, all we're coming to exclude here from exile is not a case of murder of the father. That's always going to go to exile. What we're excluding here is a case of someone that makes a wound on his father by accident. You might have thought, Salka Daita Chamina, we might have thought, Kivan de Bemezid Bar Katalahu, since if he would have wounded his father on purpose, he would have been subject to the death penalty, the son. Beshogig Nami Ligli, so if he does it by accident, the wounding, he should be exiled. Kamash Malan, comes the rabbis to teach us that he does not get killed for just wounding. He's not get exiled just for wounding. He does get killed just for wounding. He does not get exiled just for wounding. He would only get exiled for killing his father. So we have two answers. The first answer says the rabbi is Rabbi Shimon, and the second answer says, nah, the whole thing is the rabbis. It's just not talking about killing, the one where it says he doesn't go to exile. It's talking about just wounding. Good? Moving on.
Quick question.
Yeah.
There's the machloket with the rabbis and Rabbi Shimon regarding Mezid hitting the father and Mezid just killing a person. Rabbi Shimon says Mezid killing his father is chenek.
That's right.
And the rabbanans and killing a nefesh stompers and saif. Rabbis, do they say the opposite? There's the chenek for killing a nefesh?
No. Okay. The only thing the rabbis are disagreeing with is which one is the more severe, and therefore, since he's subject to two punishments, he gets the more severe one of the two.
Right.
So
either his father or anyone else, saif.
Yeah, murder is saif according to everybody here. Good?
Yeah.
Good. Next point in the Mishnah. We said in the Mishnah, Hakol Golin Al Yedei Yisrael, we said this vague statement that everybody gets sent to exile if they kill a Jew, and Jews get killed to exile if they kill everybody. Now, who are these everybodies? They're definitely not non-Jews, right? So who are we talking about over here when we say everybody? Hakol Golin Al Yedei Yisrael. When the Mishnah says everyone gets exiled if they kill a Jew, Lasuye Mai, who are we talking about here, right? What is this coming to include, this Hakol, everybody? Who is this everybody group? So there's two cases. Liisuye Eved Vekusi. We're coming to include an Eved and a Kuzi. Now, let's just make sure we understand what we're talking about. An Eved, we're not talking about a Jewish Eved, because a Jewish servant has all the same laws as a normal Jew. We wouldn't need any special Mishnah to tell me that his life is the same value as any other Jewish life. However, the novelty of this Mishnah is to tell you even a non-Jewish slave who is serving a Jew, right? So he is obligated in mitzvos like a lady, right? He's responsible for all the mitzvos like a lady would be. Eved Kenani, right? A non-Jewish servant. It doesn't have to be specifically Kenani, it's just the way we call it, right? But any non-Jewish servant, right? So he's obligated in mitzvos like a lady, and therefore, if he kills a normal Jew, he's also sent to exile. And if a Jew kills him, he's also sent to exile. Mm-hmm. It works both ways, right? He has a quasi-status of a Jew. He's like a half-Jew, right? Not exactly, right? But he's a full Jew, just not fully. Exactly. Exactly. Now, who is this Kusi? The Kusi has got an interesting historical background here. Who is the Kusi guy? Now, the Kusi is a group of people, the Kusim, I should say, are a group of people, Kuti, Kusim, you hear both ways, right? They are a group of people that immigrated to the land of Israel by force. There wasn't their choice. They came at the time of Sancheriv. Sancheriv was the Assyrian king who conquered the 10 tribes of Israel and dispersed them across the world. Right? He took the 10 tribes and exiled them and dispersed them. Now, conquering strategy of Sancheriv that he applied in all the different regions the Assyrians conquered is he did population relocation, and this was to prevent the lands from rebelling against them, from joining up forces together and rebelling against Sancheriv. So he'd take one group from here, put them here, another group, put them here. He'd displace everyone all over, mix up the communities with all over the place so that nobody would be unified enough. No one speaks the same language, right? He learned from the Tower of Babel experiment. Mm-hmm. And he said, this will be a good thing to impose on all my victims, right? And therefore, they'll never be able to rebel against me. He learned from God.
Nations right now.
Right. We don't have exactly, because they were all mixed up by Sancheriv. Now, one of the groups he imported into the land of Israel were the Kusim, right? Now, these were Ovdei Avodah Zarah. These were just the regular old idolaters from the time period. However, shortly after their arrival, a horde of lions attacked them, and they realized that they may be on the wrong side of this land's god. Right? Maybe the god of this land is not happy with our idolatrous practices, and therefore they decided the best interest for their future would be to convert. Right? So we should convert to Judaism. For hundreds of years after this, there was a debate amongst the rabbis whether this was a sincere conversion or it was an insincere conversion. I mean, they certainly continued to worship idolatry afterwards, right? They had their Jewish life, and they had their idol life, and they tried to keep things separate, but they seemed to be involved in both practices.
But the lions left them alone?
The lions left them alone at this point, yes. The lions did leave them alone at this point once they converted, right?
The lions were satiated.
Right, I guess. I don't know exactly, right? So there, eventually, at some point, so in this stage in Jewish history, there's a debate, and you see this come up in the Talmud often, as a debate where they gerei arayos or gerei emes. Were they converts because of emes, of truth? They saw the truth, so they converted? Or were they gerei arayos because the lions? That's really the word, right? Arye, right? Gerei arayos, right? Were they converts purely as a result of the lions? Now, later in Jewish history, after the times of the Mishnah, right, they found them like in some crazy idolatrous cult practice, and at that point they just said, enough of this debate, let's just ditch these guys and leave them be. So eventually it turned out that they got conclusively ruled as false converts, but we're in the intermediary time where there's a debate, and this source is for sure going according to the opinion that holds that they are real converts. So at least they're treated like Jews. And that's why what we're saying over here is if you kill a Kusi, you still get sent to exile. And if by accident, if a Kusi kills you, you still get sent, he gets, still gets sent to exile, because they have the status of Jews regardless of what their behaviors are actually like right now. Right? They still have statuses of Jews, and we accept their conversion, their original conversion. Good? Tanina lahad tan rabban. We have a braisa that supports this statement that we said in the Mishnah, that both the non-Jewish slave and the kusi are both subject to the laws of exile in both directions. Eved v'kusi, now that adds one more point here. Eved v'kusi, both a non-Jewish slave and a kusi, gola v'loka al yedei Yisrael, can be exiled or alternatively lashed, not for killing, but in a different case, they could theoretically be lashed also for doing something to a Jew. The Yisroel Gola V'loke, and a Jew is exiled and, in theory, lashed al yidei kusi ve'eved for doing something to a kusi or a servant.
That's the braisa.
That's the whole braisa. Period. Now we want to figure out what on earth the lashes part is. The exile part we understand. Everyone gets exiled for killing each other by accident. They're all Jews. We understand. The question is, what is the case of the lashes that the Gemara is going to try to figure out now? What case that the kusi accuses you of something or does something to you where he will get lashes, or maybe where you do something to him that you would get lashes? What is this case of the lashes? So the Gemara first off by says, Bishlama Eved v'kusi. I understand both the cases of the Eved, the slave, and the kusi, Gola al Yedei Yisrael V'loke. I understand both for the Eved and the kusi. What is the case where he would, the kusi himself would be exiled, and I understand where the kusi would be lashed, and the Eved, why? Go led to Katle. The kusi or the Eved would be sent to exile if they killed a Jew.
Yeah.
Simple. Veloke, and what's the case where the kusi or the Eved would get lashed? Delatye, if he cursed a Jew. Right? If you curse another Jew, your fellow Jew, that is subject to lashes. Yeah. Right? So we understand that could be the case, right? That's the case where the kusi is sent to exile, or the kusi is lashed. He's sent to exile if he murders by accident, if he kills by accident, given lashes if he curses.
The case of murder was both ways.
Yes.
What about in this case?
That's what we're getting to right now. Ela Yisroel gola v'loka al yidei kusi. But the opposite, where a Jew is sent to exile and lashed through a kusi. So, bishlama gola, I understand why a Jew would be exiled if he, dekatle, if he kills the kusi. So he should get sent to exile, that's what we said. So the exile is a two-way street. But what about these lashes? Ela loka, amai, why should the Jew get lashed? Delatye, why should a Jew be lashed for cursing a kusi? Now, what is the problem over here? The pasuk about cursing says, "V'nasi ba'amcha lo sa'or," a prince among your nation you shall not curse, and that is the prohibition for cursing that results in lashes. So the Gemara learns, it says, why does it say amongst your nation over there? Because we learn from there, Be'osem Maisa Amcha, only when he's behaving like a member of your nation is there a punishment for cursing him. Right? If the guy is actually not behaving properly at all, right, then there is no prohibition, well, there's no punishment at the very least for cursing him. Right, for cursing him. And therefore, we don't understand. This Bryce that says that a Jew would be a Kusi and an Eved get cursed, get lashed for cursing. Well, the opposite isn't true. A Jew wouldn't get lashed for cursing the Kusi. So therefore, we're stuck. We don't understand how to read this source. What is the case that would apply both ways? The lashing case that would apply both ways. Just one thing to point out over here is that we only seem to say that it's a problem with the Kusi, meaning the only case where we're challenging this from is Kusi. It sounds like the Eved, a servant, a Jew, would get lashed for cursing an Eved Kanani.
Right.
He would get lashed for cursing an Eved Kanani because who says he's behaving badly, right? He might be behaving perfectly, the guy, right? Who says it's not his fault he's not a Jew, right? He's an Eved Kanani. That's what his role is. But as long as he's behaving like a good person, right, then there's no reason to assume that a Jew wouldn't get lashed for cursing him. But a Kusi is different because the Kusi were not behaving well. So there's no reason to say that a Jew should get lashed for cursing a Kusi. They're not behaving well. So what's the case? What's the case that you have lashes both directions between Jew and Kusi? That's what we're asking right now. That's what we're missing. So that was try number one with the cursing. We said it can't be because a Jew isn't lashed for cursing a Kusi. Elam or Rav Acha bar Yaakov. Rather, Rav Acha bar Yaakov says, Kigon Sheheid bo Vehuzam. You thought you were finished with Edim Zomim. Back to Edim Zomim. What's the case? Where the Jew testified falsely about a Kusi, right? Let's say something that he was supposed to get lashes for. Right, he testified falsely about a Kusi that he ate forbidden fats or blood or something, right? So he was lying, he got caught, he was falsified, this Jew, about lying about this Kusi. So now coming back to him should be the kasher zamam, the reciprocal punishment, and he should get lashed. Maybe that's the case where the Mishnah was saying that a Jew can get lashed for something he did to a Kusi. The Gemara says, nah, that can't be because it's not consistent. Then the other way is a problem. It's true, the Kusi would get lashed for testifying against the Jew, but, well, if you testify, to kavase gabe eved sheheibo vehuzam, are you saying the opposite case where the eved would get lashed is where the eved testified against a Jew and then was falsified? Eved baredusu, is an eved allowed to testify? No. A non-Jewish servant is not allowed to testify in courts, and therefore he would not get lashed for testifying falsely about a Jew. So again, we can't figure out a case that would work both directions, where the Jew would get lashed for something he did to the Kusi and the Eved, and the Kusi and Eved would get lashed for something he did to a Jew. Yeah, sorry?
Can a Kusi testify?
It doesn't seem to say it's a problem here, which is interesting. I mean, it doesn't seem to say it's a problem here. Maybe if you found the one Kusi that was a really good guy, right, so you'd probably be able to.
Only for a while they were considered.
While they were, no, we're in this period, while they were considered. He's allowed to, assuming he's a good guy. I mean, there's no other reason that would make him puzzle from testifying. Okay, try number three, and this is going to be the winner. Let's just finish this. I know it's pushing it, but we're right at the end of this whole thing here. And what is the case here where there's a two-way street of lashes? If you hit somebody where the damage is so minimal that there isn't even a pruta, the smallest coin, the smallest measure of damage, there wasn't even that much damage. So usually if you hit somebody and you cause damage, you don't get lashes. Why? Because you only get one of the two punishments. In theory, you're subject to lashes for hitting somebody. You're not allowed to do that. But since you're paying the damages, you get exempted from the lashes. Mm-hmm. You only get one punishment, like we said before. You only get one punishment. So here you're going to get the punishment of paying, no lashes. But as soon as you did the amount of damage that's less than a shavet pruta, you're not paying. You don't have to pay anything when you do damage less than a shavet pruta. The Torah doesn't obligate you to pay, right? And therefore, you're not paying, so now you fall back on the only other punishment, which is lashes. So you should get lashes. So if you hit somebody and cause no damage, you'll get lashes. That's basically what we're seeing over here. And that is the case that should work both ways, both for the Jew, if he hits a Kusi with no damage, he should get lashes, and a Kusi who hits a Jew who causes no damage, he'll get lashes too. Da'amar Rabbi Amar Rabbi Yochanan, because we have a statement that explains this point exactly. He ko hakosh she'ein b'shava pruta. If you hit somebody with a blow that does not carry a damage of a shava pruta, loke, you get lashed. V'lo makshinen hakola klala, and you don't compare. We don't compare hitting with cursing. We don't compare hitting with no damage to cursing. Meaning cursing, we know, if a kusi cursed a Jew, he doesn't get punished because, if a Jew curses a kusi, he doesn't get punished because you only get punished for cursing somebody that behaves like your nation. So you might think, there's actually a debate in Sanhedrin if this is true, but you might think that just like you, a Jew does not get punished for cursing a kusi because he's not behaving properly, he also wouldn't get lashed for hitting a kusi who's not behaving properly either. We say that's not true. We don't compare them. Cursing is one thing. If you curse a kusi, there's no punishment because he's not behaving properly. But if you hit him, there is a punishment and you would get lashes for hitting him. And that is the explanation of what we meant in our Mishnah, by Jews and kusis will get lashes corresponding to each other. Mm-hmm. The case was cases where they hit each other and there's no damage or not enough damage for there to be a shavet pruta, and therefore there would be lashes on whoever did the hitting. Okay, we'll stop here.